Ron Ananian.
I said to the boys as we kicked off today's show, I said, you know, I kind of feel like the Blues Brothers with that scene where we've got two packs of cigarettes, we're wearing sunglasses, it's dark out, hit it. Well, I got 2 hours of radio time. I've got an awful lot to say. I want to talk about stupidity and auto repair.
Fights are more than you can chew. What can you do? Dare to be stupid.
The Car Doctor.
Do America a favor. You want to put everybody in a better mood? You bring your car to a repair shop. Put gas in the tank. It really would be a wonderful experience.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
more catalytic converters so it'll run good on regular gas. What do you say? Is it the new Bluesmobile or what?
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, come on in, sit down. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor at your service at 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor hotline is 24-7. That means if this radio show is not here on the airwaves, and we are live Saturday afternoons 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time as we begin our trek across America's radio network here starting Saturday afternoons 2 to 4 p.m. for the rest of the weekend as we are out on 80-some-odd affiliates, 80-some-odd markets, and different times, different places. If we are not here, leave a message at 855-560-9900. And Fast Harry, our executive producer, will call you back and get you in the lineup for the next time we're here live so we can talk to you on air. And we'll be gentle, promise. And we just want to do it that way because we like to do it that way because it helps educate everybody about cars and their problems and what's going on because it sure is an ever-changing, evolving animal. I had the pleasure this week. Can I tell you a story? You have a minute? And I'm sure you do because you're here with me now. I had the pleasure this week of beginning the springtime educational lectures and seminars, as I call it, courtesy of the folks at Buywise Auto Parts here in New Jersey. And great organization. They've really got their act together as far as trying to help the professional installer. And they begin in March, they begin their series of seminars, their annual monthly seminars for professionals to you know, come to class and get an education. And it was great. It's always a good time, and I always enjoy them. And this month was a particular favorite, and I'd been looking forward to it for some time. And I sort of think maybe I had something to do with it because in the past, Ryan, one of the owners, had always say, "Ron, what would you like to see?" And I'd love to see a class on reflashing. You know, because as much as you know, there's always something else you're going to learn. You're always going to pick up something. I learned a lot at this week's class. I really did, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I learned that I can't talk is the first thing, probably. I shouldn't speak at these things because, true story, before I tell you the real reason why I'm telling you this story, but it's kind of a day in the life of the radio guy, right? I'm sitting on the aisle like I always do, and Bob, the owner, one of the other owners, is coming down the aisle, and he's doing the meet and greet and kissing the babies and saying hello to everybody. And he got to me, and he shook my hand like we always do. I always enjoy talking to Bob. He's a good guy. And very knowledgeable, very in support of the industry. And out of the corner of my eye, the young gentleman sitting next to me, Jake, I believe it was Jake's Auto Repair. I think he's in West Orange, New Jersey. He's listening to the conversation Bob and I are having. And I could see the corner of his ears. Out of the corner of my eye, I can see the corner of his ears kind of pick up when I started talking. And after about a minute, he turns and he looks at me and he goes, "Ron Ananian?" "Yeah." He's like, "Wow, hey, do you know who this is? This is the Car Doctor." And Bob, the owner, was just, "Wow, look at this." And I said, "Yeah, don't tell anybody. We don't want anybody to know." But it's interesting and it's refreshing to see that this radio show is reaching the professional. And in some way, shape, or form, you know, nothing says you've made it better than acceptance by your peers. And I'm real proud of the fact and happy with the fact that my peers listen. They may not always agree with me, and that's okay. I get that. And I'm not always right. I get that too. But it's nice to know that you're doing some good, that, you know, people are listening. So the evening went on, and this evening was about reflashing, computer flashing, doing updates to computers, changing software. And the other thing that I learned Wednesday night was out of the 121 some odd mechanics that were in the room and shop owners and they all were saying the same thing. It was interesting because I go to classes to listen, not really to talk. The business in the last 6 months to a year has consistently become brakes, tires, oil changes, an occasional trans service, cabin filter, air filter, wiper blades, fuel system cleaning. And that was kind of it. I didn't hear anybody talking about they're changing power steering racks on a regular basis. I didn't hear anybody talking about they're doing a lot of shocks and struts anymore. Exhaust work didn't even come up in the conversation. Yeah, you know, that car that's 12, 15 years old or older, sure, that's back in the heyday of what auto repair was when you were doing things much more mechanical. And it seemed very fitting that this conversation was going on about how it's changed and how it's changed so fast. And it has. And it's rolling forward with a ferocity like I've never seen. And I think I'm on the edge of that change that 100 years from now, they'll be talking about the years 2014, 15, 16, 17, when the automobile industry changed. Because, you know, back in the 14, 15, 16, back in that era, did you know they drove cars on the ground and they didn't fly? And that's what they'll be saying based on what I was hearing at class Wednesday night about how the car is evolving, about how it's changing. And to that point, they were talking about computer flashing. It also made me feel like the old guy in the room because I sat there and I sat around and everybody around me, wow, you need a different computer for every manufacturer and you need to buy this scan tool and you need that scan tool and you need, and yeah, and I kind of joined in the conversation at that point. Listen, I've got a laptop for every manufacturer. I've got 5 laptops in the shop, 6 desktop computers, and, you know, this is the business today. And clearly, for the independent repair shop to survive, if they can't embrace reflash technology, I don't know that they're going to make it. And it's become that obvious and that critical. And steps are being taken. There are some changes coming in model year 2017 where they're going to revise and the revisions are already underway. There's a protocol out from the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers, J2534. You hear me buzz right through it sometimes here on the show, where I'll say, yeah, it's J2534. J2534, if you Google it, or if you want, it is a protocol standard set by the Society of Automotive Engineers that will allow anyone with proper equipment to reflash and update vehicle computers. And now we're hearing much more information. They'll be able to do more. And J2534 has been around a long time. This is nothing new. It's the changes where they're going to evolve it past just emission control devices and take it to the next level of being able to do body modules and other things. And in a sense, leveling the playing field a little bit, but also giving the independent shop the opportunity to compete at dealer level if they're smart enough to take them up on it. The bottom line Wednesday night that I walked away with was, it really is an exciting time to be a mechanic. And it really makes me proud, prideful, is that the word? That, you know, what makes the independent repair shop market stand out in my mind is they're innovators. They're always thinking. They're always working against the clock, the odds, and difficult tasks at hand. And some of the smartest people I've ever met were independent repair shop mechanics because they think outside the box. They're not programmed to do one model. Of course, I've got to also say some of the biggest idiots I've ever met are independent repair shop mechanics. And I can say that about dealer mechanics and chain store mechanics too. It's just a question of, it just seems like there's something about that breed of independent repair shop, the guys that are successful, the guys that have been doing it and succeeding and growing, and not the guys that are in it for 3 to 5 years and they're posers and they're out, that it was interesting to hear the remarks around the room. And in the end, I think the majority of them left with the feeling like, hey, you know what? I can do this. It's not that difficult a task to do. And that's important because whether you realize it or not, you take away the independent automotive repair shop industry out of this country of ours, and not only is it a blow to the economy in terms of all that they support by being there, but it's also a blow to you being able to get your car fixed and get it fixed correctly and within some kind of reasonable time frame. It's exciting to watch technology move forward. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here, 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and answer your questions. As a matter of fact, Tony, this week, tell Harry, I've decided, because spring's coming, let's try a little experiment. And I shouldn't say this too quick, but everybody that calls today, everybody, we're going to give away a Car Doctor t-shirt. All right? We have a fresh stock of Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor t-shirts in. So everybody that calls the show today during live hours, 2 to 4 p.m. this Saturday afternoon, we're going to be giving away a Car Doctor t-shirt. So just be prepared. If you do call in at 855-560-9900, have your, you know, we're going to need a mailing address and an email so we can contact you quick if we have to. But be prepared to give that to Harry as well. That'll load Harry up a little bit today. And I'm sorry, H, but let's get it done. Let's get some t-shirts out there to the public. The Car Doctor will return right after this to kick the garage doors open. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Neenan, the Car Doctor, on his own highway here as we continue this hour of Car Doctor. And let's get over and talk to Mike, Massapequa, Long Island, and a 2014 Dodge Durango. Mike, this truck's too new to be broken. What's going on here?
Yeah, you're not kidding. I guess about 2 weeks ago, I went out to start the car. The car did start, but the wipers were on. I thought we had left them on. Turns out that the signal stalk, the completely frozen, everything that's been associated with it, not working. A little bit further checking into it, the heated steering wheel wasn't working, the wiper washers weren't working, blind spot monitor was off, just check engine light was on, traction control light was on, and I mean, just generally, you couldn't drive the thing.
Right. So you took it back to Chrysler because it's a new truck and it's under warranty, and what'd they do?
Yes, I did. And the first thing they did was basically just pull out a 10-amp fuse. They told me which one. They pulled it out. They put a new fuse in and said they couldn't duplicate any reason why and sent me home.
Okay.
Went home, parked the car, started the car. Everything went crazy again. All the same items occurred, all the same failures. Went right back. This time they held the car for 4 or 5 more days, and they did a steering control module, I believe they called it.
Right.
As well as the fuse. And at that point, took the car, went home. It happened again. Exactly the same things occurred a second time. So, car's with them a third time. And I'm not sure if I put this on my email. Car's was with them a third time as I went right back. And this time they said they found a wire somewhere in the steering area that had worn off the insulation. So they put some heat shrink sleeving on it. And I got my fingers crossed that this is going to hold. I picked it up yesterday afternoon. I haven't had an issue yet.
And that sounds reasonable. You know, the only other thing I'm aware of that they're having problems with the steering modules on those trucks, but I would assume at this point they're past it because they replaced the module, is going back about a year and a half ago, Chrysler issued, there was a service campaign and recall campaign, P64, regarding the steering control module where they were updating the software. They were having problems with it. About 130,000 vehicles were affected, if memory serves me correct. And it was a software problem, not a hardware issue. So, and, you know, listen, I feel your frustration. I really do. You know, the problem is it's intermittent. If you were calling to say, hey, Ron, how would I diagnose it? You know, the first thing you've got to try and do is, can you duplicate it? And if you can't duplicate it, then you've got to do what they did and go back over the harness piece by piece by piece and look for the rub mark, look for the wear mark. Not completely uncommon. So how did they treat you overall, though, Mike?
Well, you know, just like a cattle in the herd, I mean, first time I called them, they said they couldn't get the car in for a week. But I did have some relationship with one of the tech writers there, and I called her, and she said, just bring it in. Bring it in tomorrow morning, do a night drop off. So I was able to get it in. I'm not sure it actually got looked at any more quickly, but at least it wasn't in front of the house, you know, upsetting anybody.
Yeah, annoying you looking at it, right, because it's still broken.
Yes.
You know, listen, I'll tell you what, real quick story. There's something with Chrysler of late. You're clearly not one of the only people I've heard from with a newer Chrysler product with low mileage that's having issues. We had a customer at the shop, and Rick just purchased a brand spanking new 2016 Dodge pickup truck. The truck had 658 miles on it, and it developed a check engine light and a misfire on cylinder two. He stopped by because he wanted me to look at it, and I said, Rick, it's brand new. Like, what are we doing here? You know, misfire on two. We sent him back to the dealer. I heard from him a few days later. Evidently, one of the rocker arms pulled out of the cylinder head, and he's got to get a whole new engine from Chrysler. 658 miles. You know, it's Chrysler's got some quality control issues. I've got to say it. I'm seeing them go through some meltdowns here and there. And yes, I do see problems at GM and Ford and Toyota and Honda. But not at 658 miles. I don't see those failures. I don't see problems on 2014 Chevys at 10,000 miles where they're rubbing through wiring harnesses. Does it happen? I'm sure it does. It just seems like Chrysler's going through a bit of a rough patch right now, and I'm not sure why. I see Chrysler playing a lot of catch-up with the industry. Hey, I'll tell you what, Mike, stay on the line. Make sure Harry gets your information. We're going to send you out a Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor t-shirt as our way of saying thanks to you for being part of the Car Doctor Nation, and maybe that'll soften the blow. And we appreciate you being one of our listeners, and let's see if that can help you out. Give Harry your information. Let's get over to line two and talk to Larry, Rialto, California. Larry, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Good. What's going
on? Good. I called last week. I got the 93 Toyota truck. I called last week about it.
Right. Yep.
And I sent it a compression test, and cylinders 1, 2, and 3 were all at roughly 197 to 200 PSI.
Right.
Number 4 was at 185. So this morning I went in and I adjusted the valves. They were a little tight on number 4. So I readjusted them. I adjusted them hot as well.
Right.
And I did a double check again on the compression. They're all roughly at 200 PSI now.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, where do I go from here?
Do you still have the miss?
I still have the miss.
Is it still on cylinder? It was 2, right? Which cylinder?
Cylinder number 4 was the one that was the lower compression.
Okay, so the compression, yeah, which cylinder had the misfire, though? Or you don't have the ability to tell that, do you?
No, I don't know. That's the problem.
Well, can we do, since this is a 93 and, you know, a pretty basic animal, can we at this point do some cylinder power balance analysis, get a pair of spark plug wires and pop a plug wire off one by one and see which cylinder provides the greatest amount or the least amount of drop? Can we kind of go through that?
I could do that.
Okay. But be careful. What you want to do is, if this should have an idle air control device on it, you want to disconnect it so that it's at base idle and it doesn't change. And then maybe bump the idle speed to about 800 RPM, either with a stick on the gas pedal or with the base idle screw. Disconnect the EGR valve, because it should have one, and pop spark plug wires off one by one. Let's see which one changes. Hey, Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor, we're coming up next with Steve Cook. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. You know, our next guest started out as a caller, and I've really enjoyed developing this relationship with Steve Cook over the past year, because he's got so much to say and he's so spot on about what this industry was, is, and becoming. And I suppose as his position of being an automotive instructor in the Northeast, Northwest, and all different places over the years, that helps. But he works with young people and he sees what's up and coming. And sometimes when I talk to him, he tells me he's afraid, and sometimes he tells me he's proud. I'm not sure which way he's going to be today, but always a good conversation. Mr. Cook, welcome back aboard, sir. How are you?
Hi, Ron. How you doing?
All right. I couldn't be better.
Good.
Interesting email that you sent me here talking about two things that started out. Recruiters are going to Votech schools to try and convince students and parents to enroll in their school. And you want to talk a little bit about that, about your observations about where you see the trades going and where they've come from.
Right. Well, one of the things I was trying to tell you in the email is, this time of year, being an automotive instructor, I would see a lot of recruiters coming in from different technical colleges and that. And, of course, they're trying to get the kids to go to their colleges and continue their education, which is fine. But I've learned a lot of things over the years from observing and stuff like that. And I got some tips that might help your listeners, particularly if they got, kids that are getting ready to go off to college in the next couple of years or what have you.
Sure, go ahead. What do you got?
Okay. You can hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm getting all kinds of garble on this end. Okay. First off, if you got someone going to school in the next couple of years, it's very, very important that they get the absolute best grades they can. A's and B's across the board. And there's really a good reason for this, and this is one of the main things I want to talk to you about, is there is grant money out there for people to go to school and scholarships and in trade schools too. But there's qualifications that have to be met for those. And a lot of those are grade-related, attendance-related, those kind of things. And a lot of people don't know this, Ron, but outside of Pell Grants that the government supplies, there are plenty of private sector grants and scholarships available out there. And a lot of these kids can darn near go to college for free if they just put forth the effort to apply for them.
Steve, do you think that the demand for young people to go to trade schools is increasing? Is there more of a reason they would want to go at this point versus going to a traditional four-year college?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I look at it this way. You go to a four-year college, you get out. Maybe you go in for accounting or something. You come out and you can't find a job being an accountant. I can go to a technical college, go for 2 years, come out with an associate's degree in automotive technology, and go to work, in the automotive industry, repairing automobiles or something along that line. Or I can take a 2-year course in welding, which is what one of my cousin's husband did. And he's out there now. He's been out as a welder for 2 years, and he's pulling down like $80,000 a year. And it cost him he went to a local college, a community college, so it cost him about 20 grand.
Not a bad return on investment, right? Versus the kid that goes to a 4-year school, spends 200 grand on an education, and they're 35 before they've paid that debt off in some cases.
Yeah, if they ever pay it off.
Right.
But, I mean, The grant money's out there, and what I want people to understand is you just got to go look for it. If you ask a lot of these colleges or trade schools that you go to what grants are available, they're going to just point you to a Pell Grant, and then they're going to bury you in debt with student loans. So if you're going to college, you need to start digging for this stuff now. I'm looking at, in front of me right now, I have a federal mogul grant, a $2,500 scholarship for the 16-17 school year. Okay, they're going to award 12 of these. The application process isn't that bad, and you'd be surprised. They might not even fill all these 12 spots up that they got.
Do you see, how long have you been teaching, Steve? Let me ask the question this way.
Mm-hmm.
How many years have you been teaching?
Five.
Okay, how many years?
Actually, six, sorry.
How many years are you in the industry?
About 25.
So do you see the demand for technicians now stronger than when you started in the industry, or do you see it weakening, the demand?
Let me put it this way. I see the demand for strong, for good, high quality technicians. I see the demand for them growing, So I see demand for them, yeah, but it's like you're saying earlier, too. A lot of stuff we're getting to where, the cars nowadays are so much better built. And, we're not seeing quite as much demand as we had at one time, but there's still, we still need a lot of technicians out there. But we're looking for quality people is what we're looking for.
And we almost need that kid that can graduate a 4-year college with a degree, in some cases, mechanical engineering and other electronic engineering, because the vehicle is getting to be so complex that it's just a constant evolvement. And then I always wonder, you know, at what level will the motoring public accept it, and how will they accept it? You know, it's auto repair. I've looked at it, and I think there's probably 7 or 8 different regions of auto repair around the country when I start to divide things up in my head, you know, northeast, southeast, and so on, and different problems face mechanics and technicians and consumers in those regions. And at some level, you know, I went to class Wednesday night. I don't know if you heard the open of the show. I went to class Wednesday night, and they were talking about computer reflashing. And we were discussing the costs involved with computer reflashing, both for the consumer and the technician. And an average computer reflash in North Jersey dollars is $150, parts and labor. And they talk about it in class like, yeah, that's not a problem. Everybody will want to do that. And, you know, the very next day, my first customer at the counter, I reminded him about the third brake light that hasn't been working in his car for the past 2 years, and it's not a bulb, it's an LED board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Toyota, and it's some $300 worth of third brake light. I don't want to fix that. Even against the possibility of a ticket, and my point is the technology is great, and all the things you and I talk about are true, but at what point does the consumer accept it, and will they accept it? And, you know, force its hand. In Bergen County, if the gas tank's empty and the ashtray's full, they want to get rid of the car. In Southern Florida, in Southern California, in Texas, in Oklahoma, and other places around the country, it's all different responses from what I see and hear. I have people that call from Virginia. They've got 9 cars, and they're 35, 40 years old, and they're still driving them. They don't care. They don't want to buy a new car. They're going to keep it going. They've got a real fix-it mentality, which is great. It's a can-do attitude. And I just wonder, you know, where is this going to take us?
Well, my opinion is this. We've been teeter-tottering back and forth between the price of a new car and the price of repairing them. You know, one tends to go a little higher than the other and back and forth and back and forth. So the thing that I look at and I've seen a lot of is people will live without a third brake light, but when it comes time for them to start walking, they'll get their ride fixed.
Yeah, they'll
know what I mean?
That'll change real quick. Hey, Steve, I'll tell you what, sit tight. Stay on the side for a couple of minutes. Let me pull over and take this pause for the cause, as we say. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, Steve Cook, Cincinnati, Ohio. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor here. We're talking to Steve Cook, an automotive instructor and fast becoming one of the Car Doctor's personal favorites from Cincinnati, Ohio. And we're just having a general conversation. Mr. Cook, you're still there.
Yes, sir.
You know, when we took the pause, Steve, we were kind of talking about grants and scholarships and the value in an automotive education. Let's shift gears, if we can, in the time we've got left. The EPA is trying to, and they're going to be successful. It's not that they're trying to. They're removing cleaning agents from gasoline. And there's conversation that, you know, model year 2017, model year 2018, or calendar year, I'm sorry, 2017, 2018, you're going to see this become reality. Will there be no more cleaning agents in gasoline? You know, your experience as a technician and as an instructor, how important are these detergent additives right now?
Well, think about how they got in it to begin with. We had fuel-injected vehicles came out, and the car manufacturers were asking the petroleum industry to clean up the gasolines to remove the, you know, reduce the carbon buildup, things of that nature, help keep the injectors flowing cleanly like they should and everything. And that's why stuff was put in there to begin with. It helps the car run cleaner over the long run. You can take a brand new car, not have those additives in it, and run it, and yeah, it's going to produce a little less emissions out the tailpipe. I grant them that. But what happens when that car, and you got these direct injected cars that you and I both know,
they're a problem.
Have a problem with carbon buildup.
Oh,
in that,
boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happens when that car gets 15, 20,000 miles on it without those detergent additives? The cars are going to be missing. They're going to be doing what have you. They're going to be polluting a whole heck of a lot more than if they left the detergents in it. And this is why I was telling you, you know, these guys at the EPA that decide to do this stuff, they're educated idiots. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's just dumb. And it's going to wind up costing car owners a whole lot more money to fix this problem than if they would have just left it alone. And it's not going to make the air any cleaner at the end of the day.
Well, and I think, too, that if they were taking the detergents out of the gasoline and then said, okay, and to really solve the problem, we're not going to let companies exist that make fuel detergent cleaners and detergent additives and so forth. We're going to get rid of them, too.
Now that's next.
Well, maybe. And maybe I shouldn't say it because, you know, we're on in the Washington market, and I'm sure we've got some government listeners. But, you know, you just wonder what they're thinking.
I don't know. I just don't think they're thinking. But how many people in the American public are gonna put up with every 30, 40,000 miles having to have the cylinder heads yanked on a car to get the carbon off the valves because the engine's missing?
Yeah, we're going backwards. I mean, we did that back in the 60s and the 70s. Here we go again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the way things were. I mean, this whole thing is just people need to call their congressmen, and they need to start raising some holy you-know-what, because this is going to hit their pocketbooks something awful.
Yep.
Now, I have an opinion as to why they're doing this, and I'm not going to say it on the air because they might pull your license for it. But I have my opinions to why they're doing this. But the bottom line is, people, you better call your congressman and you better scream on the top of your lungs that they need to stop this and stop it now, because it's going to cost you a fortune if you don't.
Steve Cook, always a great interview, always a great conversation. Listen, stay on the line. Let Harry get some information from you. You qualify as a caller today, so we're going to be sending you out a Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor T-shirt. You'll do us proud if we could see you wear it. All right, sir?
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Steve. Hang in there, and we'll be talking again real soon. I'm Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. I'm back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Indian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900, the Car Doctor's 24-7 number. Anybody that gets on the air with me today, this hour is almost over, but next hour, anybody that gets on the air with us next hour, we'll be giving out a Ron and Indian, the Car Doctor T-shirt, so just a little incentive. We would like to hear from you, and if you can get on the air and get in, you'll be having something nice to wear come spring as we're trying to help celebrate and promote springtime cruising and walking and driving and all kinds of fun outdoor activities. Had a Nissan this week. I just want to touch on this before I go. Had a 2012 Nissan Altima this week that required a throttle body cleaning. And as a result of that, as I've been talking about for a while, after the throttle body cleaning, it was mandatory that I had to do a throttle relearn because the throttle position had to be reset. It learned a new position. Otherwise, the computer would set a fault code. And sure enough, launched to the rescue again out of the 18 scan tools in the shop, the X431 and even the newer, the Pad 2, both had the capability to do a throttle relearn on that 2012 Nissan Altima. And it made me just sit there and scratch my head and say, it's so easy for some scan tool manufacturers. I can't figure out why the rest don't do it. Now, I told you that story so I could read this email. Ron, or I'm sorry, it starts out with, Harry, can you ask Ron where to get a launch scanner? This comes to us from Mike in Montgomery. Can you get one from the company or from Snap-on or Mack Tools or Harbor Freight? Let me answer the first part first, Mike. The you know, you can get a launch scan tool from a variety of places. There's if you Google launch, you'll find them out on the web. I believe it's launchtechusa.com is the main website, launchtechusa.com. Primarily, you will find launch scan tools from a variety of sources. Mack Tools, I'm not sure about Matco. Definitely not Snap-on. As Snap-on has their own scan tool, they're peddling. But Mack or Matco, Cornwell, I think, is another tool truck guy that's out there on the open trade. But if you go to launchtechusa.com, they will be glad to tell you where their dealers and distributors are, because I also know they maintain They maintain dealers and national salesmen, so you can find one that way, launchtechusa.com. That trade show coming up in New Jersey, it open to the public? You know, Mike, I don't think that it's not open to the public. That's a question for them. I would get out and I would Google the AASPNJ trade show coming up at the Meadowlands in Secaucus, New Jersey. And matter of fact, we're going to be there. I should point that out, March 19th. I guess that's 2 weeks from today. We're going to be down in the Meadowlands doing this radio show live from the floor show. But if you want to get out to AASPNJ.com, look them, or not .com, but Google AASPNJ, the trade show in the Meadowlands, and you can look up and see what registration requirements are. I don't think they deny the public, but I don't know that it's necessarily a show for the public, if you follow what I'm meaning. So, you know, you can look forward to that. And I appreciate the email, Mike. Hey, Ron and Andy, the car doctor. The mechanics aren't expensive. They're